So God therefore must vindicate his authority in the same arena where he was seemingly defeated. This office of theocratic administrator has to be brought back, not to the new heavens and new earth, but to this earth. Because this is the earth where God lost, in a sense, that particular battle. He lost the battle, but he's not losing the war. And if you don't have a millennium in your thinking, there is no place in future history for God to reassert the office of theocratic administrator. In the millennial kingdom, the whole thing is reasserted. What he wanted in Eden gets reestablished as God the Father rules over not the first Adam, but the who? Last Adam, and the last Adam, Jesus Christ, the second member of the Trinity, governs planet Earth 4,000 years for God. Only for God the Father. Only after that season has elapsed will God destroy this world and replace it with something new. If the world is destroyed, and you watch these movies in Hollywood and things that come out, and I was on the plane for about 14 hours, so I watched about four different movies. I wasn't using my time as wisely as I could have, I guess, but I got hooked. There's all these movies about the earth exploding and all these kinds of things, and it's just bad theology. This earth can't go out of existence. It can't explode. We can't even destroy the earth. Okay? This earth cannot go out of existence until God's authority over it is vindicated. Then God will melt it down by fire and replace it with something new. And if this earth could be destroyed before God reinstitutes his authority, then he doesn't win. See? Charles Ryrie says, "Why is an earthly kingdom necessary? Did he not receive his inheritance when he was raised and exalted in heaven? Is not his present rule his inheritance? Why does there need to be an earthly kingdom? Because he must be triumphant in the same arena where he was seemingly defeated. His rejection by the rulers of this world was on this earth. His exaltation must also be on this earth. And so it shall be when he comes to rule this world in righteousness. He has waited long for his inheritance. Soon he shall receive it." The amillennialist says Jesus' position at the right hand of the Father is enough. I would concur in the sense that his position at the Father's right hand is a position of honor and glory, but it is not enough. He has to reassert authority over what was lost. And the only place in history where that happens is in the millennial kingdom. And people say, oh, you know, why can't that happen in the eternal state? At the far right-hand side of the chart. It can't happen in the eternal state because the eternal state is a new earth. He has to assert authority over this earth. So the doctrine of the millennial kingdom begins in Genesis, if you really want to understand it correctly. Now, one of the things they do to you at Dallas Seminary when you get your doctoral degree is they put you in what we used to call the smoky back room. And they would, you know, almost like an inquisition, you know, they'd shine a light on you. It wasn't quite that bad. But they would ask you questions, you know, an oral exam. And you weren't really given any hints as to what they might ask. There were four professors in the room. Each professor gets a half an hour with you. And you're just answering questions on the fly. And then they ask you to leave the room. And then they have their little council meeting. And then you come back into the room and they tell you you passed the exam or you didn't pass. So it was kind of a nerve-wracking time. So I always had my ear to the ground to figure out, you know, what questions am I going to be asked? And one of the traditions that I heard about was Harold Honer, who's gone to be with the Lord. He would ask students, where do you begin, defend your doctrine of the millennial kingdom. Where do you start in the Bible? And the student would get nervous and say, Revelation 20. And he would say, well, can you go a little earlier in the Bible than that? The student would get nervous and say, well, Paul talked about it. Honer would say, go a little earlier. Oh, gosh. Jesus said, thy kingdom come. Honer would say, go a little earlier. Well, the prophets talked about it. Go a little earlier in the Bible. Moses talked about it. Go a little earlier in the Bible. And what Honer was doing is pushing the students back to Genesis 1. Because your doctrine of the millennium doesn't start with Paul, doesn't start with Jesus, it starts right there in Genesis 1. God has to assert what was lost, and the theocratic administrator office has to come back. This takes us to a third reason for the millennial kingdom. And let's take our Bibles, if we could, and go over to the prophet Isaiah. Isaiah 65 and verses 17 through 25. Third reason for the millennial kingdom is to fulfill Old Testament promises. Isaiah 65 verses 17 through 25. There are a plethora of promises in the Bible that don't fit today. They don't fit the eternal state either. The only place where they could logically fit is an earthly kingdom, in between the return of Christ and the eternal state, the Son's kingdom. Notice verse 17. For behold, I create a new heavens and new earth. The former things will be remembered, will not be remembered or come to mind. But be glad and rejoice, for in what I create, for behold, I create a Jerusalem for rejoicing, and her people for gladness. I will rejoice in Jerusalem and be glad in my people, and there will no longer be heard in her the voice of weeping and the sound of crying. No longer will there be in it an infant who lives but a few days, or an old man who does not live out his days. For the youth will die at the age of 100, and the one who does not reach the age of 100 will be thought accursed. They will build houses and inhabit them. They will also plant vineyards and eat of their fruit. They will not build and another inhabit. They will not plant and another eat. For as the lifetime of a tree, so shall be the days of my people. My chosen ones will wear out the work of their hands. They will not labor in vain or bear children for calamity, for they are the offspring blessed by the Lord and their descendants with him. It will also come to pass that they will call, and I will answer. And while they are still speaking, I will hear. The wolf and lamb will graze together. The lion will eat straw like the ox, and the dust will be the serpent's food. They will do no evil or harm in my holy mountain, says the Lord. What are you going to do with that prophecy? A lot of people say it's being fulfilled today. Let me ask you a question. Are people living into their hundreds today? And if they don't make it to 100, they're considered like a 16-year-old? It says there in verse 20 that if someone doesn't live to the age of 100 or dies at the age of 100, everybody's going to kind of sit around and say, isn't it sad that such a young man died? So obviously this prophecy is not happening today because it's talking about lifespans that are elongated. It talks in this passage, verse 18, about Jerusalem rejoicing. Is Jerusalem rejoicing today? See that green area? That's Islamic countries. See that little tiny red area? That's Israel. And what is the world community saying? Israel just needs to give up a little bit more and we'll be happy. Obviously, Jerusalem's not rejoicing. She's under attack today. Sadly, these verses in Isaiah show up on the wall of the United Nations. And the United Nations, when they print these things or engrave these things on their wall, they're assuming a messianic prerogative. They're saying that they can do something that only the Messiah can do. Actually, there have been more wars since the foundation of the United Nations after than before. So what I'm trying to say is these passages are not being fulfilled today. And a lot of people, what they want to do is they want to sort of haul it over into the far right-hand column of the chart, and they want to make this an eternal state passage. And they think that because verse 20, God says, verse 17, for behold, I create a new heavens and new earth. And they think that's Revelation 21 and 22. The problem is, verse 20 talks about death. For the youth will die at the age of 100. And the one who does not reach the age of 100 will be thought accursed. Can there be death in the eternal state? There cannot be. And if you don't believe me, read Revelation 21 and verse 4. It specifically says that in the eternal state, there's no more death.